Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. We have two, dare I say, excellent games to talk about, Kevin, in my eyes, from an enjoyment and entertainment standpoint and from an analysis standpoint, pretty high up on the scale. An OT win over the Jazz. They fly to L.A., play the Clippers next night in a super physical game. Two ejections, two flagrant fouls. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing well, and yes, we're, relevant basketball teams who play good basketball. I think after the Jazz game, I tweeted something like, my brain is blown because I haven't, watched these types of games where there's just so much, and you wrote in the headline, chess matchy stuff going on, and I think we got two in a row there.
Yeah, we will skip over the two other games that have happened since we last podcasted, the win over Oklahoma City at home and then the road win in Houston where some of the crunch time stuff happened. That doesn't really matter in terms of the grand scheme of things, because the games that matter are these ones that they get them ready for the playoffs. And I think it was interesting to hear the players and Monty kind of echo what we've been talking about. And I think you were one of the first ones to bring it up when we were maybe podcasting at the All-Star break, or maybe even a week or two before that. I think you said you just wanted to see how they basically were getting ready for the playoffs in the last 2 months of the season or so. You wanted to see how that process went, how they stacked up against these teams when they were fully healthy and when that playoff environment kind of came out. So I'll just ask you, what were your general thoughts on both games and just impressions from them?
I mean, generally, I think we both expected Chris Paul and Devin Booker to take their game to that super assertive level. And obviously Chris Paul, from the jump in that Utah game, he was that dude who was, taking a bunch of shots after we had watched him through the last several months, just kind of try to feel his team out. But we also saw, an aggressive DeAndre Ayton, and we also saw some of the role players struggle in these games. And that's, I think, to me, where you look back at these games and you look ahead to the playoffs and where you're going to say that's where swings are going to happen, is how many of these role players can play well, how many don't. Because I think, I think Book and Chris Paul, we're going to have to talk to them schematically, but I don't really think we have to talk about their, being ready for the moment, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Let's start there. Because I think that what I wrote about for the Clippers game is that the core guys that you wanted to see step up in these games, I think did. People are going to point at Jay Crowder maybe the most as an underperformer in these games. He shot 2 of 9 from three, which were all of his shots in the Jazz game. And then in the Clippers game, I think that he was worse. And I don't necessarily think that he was bad in the Jazz game, but I think that the Clippers game was one of his worst games of the year. But with that being said, he grabbed 12 rebounds in that Jazz game. He was part of so many key defensive possessions, and I think that's where some things are maybe going to get lost a bit in discussing this team in the future. I don't know if you listened to it, but Bill Simmons on his podcast talked for about 20 minutes at the open about his case for the Suns making the finals. And it was a really optimistic look at the team. And I think it was some recency bias from him, because he said that Crowder stunk in the Clipper game and was saying maybe that's a moment where they need to get Cam Johnson out there or have someone else out there as opposed to Crowder. But I think that he's still super important to what they do defensively. And is a moment guy. He hit that three in the Jazz game that should have really sealed the game, because Booker's shot just goes in and out. Mitchell hits I don't think people were even reacting enough to how crazy that Donovan Mitchell shot was. I don't know how you felt watching it at home, but for me, at least at the arena, I was like, holy smokes, that's an incredible shot. And I watched it back at home, and I was like, okay, it wasn't as amazing as I pictured it, which was him sprinting at 60 miles an hour and stopping on a dime and hitting a leaner. But it was still pretty amazing. And So they weren't able to win off that shot, but then Cam Johnson hits a shot in OT as well. We'll talk about DeAndre. He was great in both of these games. And then you mentioned Chris and Devin. So I think that everyone, I didn't mention Mikal either, but he was the most active 0.5 guy in the Clippers game. He had 20 points. They really needed someone else to step up there, and I think that would have been a blowout with the threes not going down if Mikal wouldn't have had a good offensive game. And then the Utah game, I think he did his best on Donovan Mitchell. It was one of those rare games where someone was getting the better of him when he was defending them, and he got some tough foul calls on him as well. But I think it's to your point again, everyone stepped up that you wanted to see step up. I mean, we can talk about Dario Saric later and things like that, Torrey Craig, yada, yada. But I think that's the most important thing. And there's going to be a playoff game like this, Kevin, where Booker and Paul combine to take like 55 shots. Like, games like this just kind of spiral into their own and kind of take on a life of their own is more of what I'm trying to say. And that's kind of what happened in the Utah game. And for them to win that game, and for Book, after shooting 5 of 16 the second half and probably feeling the effects of guarding Donovan Mitchell for a lot of that second half as well, to come back and shoot 3 of 5 in OT and lock up the game when it mattered was very encouraging.
Yeah, and I would even go and say that the Clippers game, I looked at the box score when Mikal had like 15 points, and I was surprised he had 15 points. And honestly, to me, I don't know if he had the best game as far as impact-wise on the defensive end, just because I'd have to go back, and I haven't had time, but whether they were switching, whether they were just not attacking when he was on a certain guy, I just didn't feel like he had that, you know, impact, because you look, Kawhi at 27, Paul George at 33, and both of those guys, it seemed really easy for them. And not saying that's Mikal's fault, but I think one thing out of that game that I'm wondering about is if teams go away from Mikal, and if the Suns can figure out how to really key him on the guys who are going right at that moment, because I think that I just didn't see enough there. And again, I don't want to like put blame on him or Monty or whatever, but there were holes there from that game that I think that they can go and search for. And obviously, look, that how long they played the night before matters, tired legs matter. But it just seemed like the Clippers were getting too many good looks, I guess.
They were just getting a couple too many. And the Jazz game was maybe one of their most complete efforts of the season. It definitely was. I'm wondering if it was the number one. And the only thing that I can really think of was this 2 to 3 minute stretch in the third quarter where they started to let the Jazz just get like three or four looks from three that were just a little too easy. And I think that kind of speaks to the standard that they were holding prior to that, and just how well they were defending and how well they were doing their game plan, which was to let the Jazz shoot threes, but on their terms, which is going to be, you're going to take a lot of these off the dribble with the screen coming from Gobert, because we're going to play super deep and our help guys are just going to be in the right position. And I think that to go back to Crowder and Mikal, like, that's just asking, when you're playing a style like that, like, drop coverage is drop coverage. Like, it's been used for a while now for a reason. But with that being said, doing it against a team like that moves the ball like that, and basically giving the ball handler a dribble or two to kind of figure out where the defense is, that's asking a lot of the help guys and their rotations and being in the right spot and making sure not to get too far off a shooter. Because in the third quarter, there was one where Cam Johnson was just a step too close to the lane, and I believe it was Niang got like a wing three, or Clarkson. It was actually Clarkson. And so that's just an example of like how high the standard is for them in that area. And I thought they were really good there. We should talk about DeAndre, because I think he's like the main player to take away from these two games. This was, I don't want to say a throwback necessarily, Kevin, you wrote a whole piece on this, but it's when he gets on the offensive glass to a certain level, that's when we mostly see the best out of him. I'm not using definitive words here for a reason, because there's still little moments here and there that creep in, not in these two games necessarily, but there have been moments this year where he's crashed the offensive glass and we still haven't seen the production in some stretches. But it's the easiest way for him to impact a game, and he seems to have a really great feel for it, because you watch a lot of those, the offensive rebounds for me, Kevin. I think the Utah game was a lot more of just hustle and work and doing the work beforehand. And then in the Clipper game, it was a lot of that too, but he also just showed a really great feel for using his length and his hands to tip the ball away from Zubac a lot. He was reaching over him a lot, and it wasn't over the back or anything. So it was really impressive.
I think just starting with the physicality that he has on these big centers, like Zubac is a big dude. Like, people don't think about him being a great player, but he will play 20 minutes and get you 10 rebounds. Like, he's that guy. Obviously Rudy Gobert speaks for himself. Like, his resume speaks for itself. But like, I thought DA holding him to 7 field goal attempts, even though he made all 7, that matters to some degree. It matters that, you know, he went on that run where he wasn't really rebounding the ball, and then suddenly he just flipped a switch, and it was just the motor was there, the effort was there, and I just, that's why I wrote about what came out of that was how quickly he will pass it back out on an offensive board, or how quickly he'll get it to an outlet guy or just anyone around him to ignite a break. I think that one play where he rebounded a miss, tapped it basically to CP3, and CP3 threw it ahead to Book for a layup in transition, like, against good defensive teams, that matters a lot, I think, and people don't realize it, where it's just it's scoring against a defense that's not set. That's the extreme example. But even if it's like a secondary break or something, I think, you know, every second matters, and he's just underrated as far as that goes. Plus, like, going all the way back to that Nets game that they blew the giant lead, I just remember how you just could feel that off misses, or if they piled up 2 or 3 defensive possessions in a row with a stop, how much his rebounding matters and how much better the offense flows when it's coming off missed buckets. That's really what we've talked about. This team is so good after the end or otherwise. So, yeah, I think he was huge there, huge on defense, you know, against both the Clippers and the Jazz. He took good shots, whether that's mid-ranges, hook shots. Even he had a trailer 3, I think, this past game. But I just like his shot selection. Even his passing, like, he's just looking like a confident guy who's feeling good about himself right now.
I agree. Yeah, it feels like he's on a consistent role for the most part. Again, I'm just, like, so hesitant to say that he's finally starting to figure things out and things like that, because it has to be sustained for such a long time because of how inconsistent he's proven to be. But it's, to use the word encouraging again, it's an encouraging development for him to have this come out of his game in games like this. Kevin, we've talked about with this team, I think, like, even 10 or 15 games into the season, I remember what I wrote about for the first meeting against the Jazz that they won 5 games into the season. My point was, this can become the identity of this team, which is they play great defense and they have 2 guys who can just create offense on their own. And when it gets down to, like, the game being close at the end, that's what you can build off of and win with. But it was also the fact that, like, this team is tough and it seems like they respond to physicality well. And they're just a team that's kind of made for the playoffs in terms of the style of play that it's in. They took 20 free throws against the Jazz, and Book had 10 of those, so he had half their free throw attempts. And then the Clipper game, he had 14 of their 30 free throw attempts. I know that he didn't play his best game against the Jazz. I think that his defense had a lot to do with that, and I think he still played well against Utah, in my opinion. That might be a hot take for some, but I thought he was pretty great, even with the 5 turnovers in the first quarter. And then the Clipper game, that was just a lot of game plan on him. And for him to even get 24 points in that game, I don't really know how he did it, because they ran a lot of blitzes at him. And they were on tired legs as well. I wanted to use Book as, like, my chief example of just how this team kind of responds to physical style and playoff style basketball. But my answer is obviously yes. But did this meet your standards in terms of how you expected this team to match that style of play? Because we've seen them play high level games, but I wouldn't necessarily say that the Bucks game or the Sixers game was played at a very physical style. And both of these games certainly were.
Yeah, you're going to get a hot take. I guess it's a hot take for me about that kind of stuff. But so I agree that they met everything. And I think, you know, looking back to after the All-Star break, where Book was seemingly mad about his snub still. And he didn't handle, you know, trash talk, physical play the greatest. He got some tees. The last two games, I thought he was really good about, like, you could see how he responded, right? Like, Kawhi dunks on DA, which is, I was glad DA was there. He tried. And then the next time Kawhi goes down the lane, like, Book does the thing that Charles Barkley and Eddie Johnson will always say, like, he put it on, like, he was like, I'm not getting dunked on. You're going to be on the ground after this. We don't need to debate the flagrancy that.
It's a very simple play, Kevin. He knocked the ball away so he couldn't get dunked on, and then he put his other arm in a place where he wasn't going to get take a bump in the chest from Kawhi, which is a foul.
Yep.
And his forearm just happened to be where Kawhi's neck was. I'm not saying that to be cute. I'm just saying it was an unfortunate turn for it's a regular foul that turned to a flagrant because he so happened to have his forearm in his throat. But it's he put his forearm there like, I'm fouling you here.
Yeah. And it was questionable whether it should have been a flagrant, whatever. But I think after they gave him the flagrant, I'm pretty sure he went and responded by like, okay, you're going to call it this way. I'm going to get two more foul shots. And that's how he got to 24 because he went 12 of 14 from the line. Like I really liked how he's, you know, when things aren't going great, he's just like, I'm going foul hunting. That's how this game's being reffed. And you know, everything from that to the chippiness with Pat Bev's flagrant two to, you know, Paul George afterwards saying whatever he said about them chirping. Like, I just think that Book and Chris Paul, Book has obviously not been there, but I trust that they're going to be doing the right thing and playing the right way and not losing their heads about it. But yeah, all from that standpoint, I think this is a playoff ready team. And I guess DA is the biggest one where he's met the challenge two games in a row. And again, like, we can say that he's been up and down in his career, but look, Dario has been down the last two games and that's not good. It happens to people, but I it's encouraging, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And you know that Jay Crowder probably will have a good game. You know that Mikal can rebound from a bad game where he's in foul trouble. So I just think they just got to keep building this. I will say, like, Abdel Nader might've mattered last night. I don't know why that thought kept creeping into my head, but against that wing heavy team, like I just think there's a Langston Galloway could have been used instead of Javon Carter. I think there's a lot more room of investigating these things as we keep going and they play like, you know, pretty good teams.
Yeah. Torrey Craig spent some time guarding Paul George. I want to say in the third quarter, so definitely, bad. Definitely more of that for sure. I agree. I think the way that I would outline it, I guess, is the first step for a young and inexperienced team is how they respond to the style of play. And I think that I don't think you should be worried about Book. I don't think you should be worried about Mikal. And DeAndre has shown that he can respond to it, I think, as well. I phrase it that way, of course, because of what I was just talking about with him, and I'm just afraid to like fully commit to it but I think that he's always shown, I'll say this, he's always shown to respond to that level of play when it's shown. So there's no reason to believe that this will suddenly like go away once the bright lights of the playoffs are on. I think that it'll still bring out the best in him in like this regard, at least that he's going to respond to the tone. And like Kevin, he had to be exhausted through that game. Like there were times where I think that, I can't remember who missed. I want to say it was Chris Paul's mid-range with 90 seconds left in regulation. It was either his miss or Book's, but I'm pretty sure it was Chris's. And he like got caught under the rim for about a half second not running, and then Javon and the entire bench was like, get back! And then he just started sprinting back, and he beat Gobert back down. But he must have been exhausted playing 41 minutes with how physical he was for him. Like centers just don't really do that. Gobert only played 37. Like he played more minutes than Gobert and was being even more physical than Gobert. So again, I don't really know how he does that stuff. It's pretty remarkable when he does it, because he's had stretches like that where he's played like the last 17 minutes of a game and it seems like he's still able to turn it up even though there are signs of him being tired, and then he just gets through it somehow.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it past seasons and at the beginning of this year, and Monty even mentioned it about he's just got to get into shape. And I think that's a really good sign that he can get there. Like against the Jazz, like you said, when you're playing that many minutes, you don't, I notice him like being like, I'm kind of tired, but you didn't notice just like a massive drop off the cliff of how he was moving. Rebounding obviously was there late. So I think that's really promising. Not that we should talk about like conditioning stuff very often, but it matters for bigs. It just does, I think.
So over the, you think like playoff basketball and you look at the minute numbers and all that kind of stuff. I wanted to talk about the bench a bit before we get done. Cam was awesome in the Utah game. I referenced it at the end of my story on the game. He had that first 9 minute shift that you were tweeting about where he just made like seven different plays that were meaningful. And then he was, once they were ready to call a timeout, he was hands on knees after his shift because he was just, he had to be exhausted. And then he just went on to play a total of 37 minutes on the night and was great in the game as a whole, hit the biggest shot, the second biggest shot of the game for the Suns, which was that three off Book's improvised screen. And then Chris's three to kind of seal the deal was the biggest one. So he plays 37 minutes. Dario played 11, Craig played 12, Payne 10, Carter 9. Just kind of with that thing of Monty, like, okay, how much time can I be allowed here to go? This is what fans have wanted to see more of course. If you've been looking at my mentions at all, when I tweet anything about anyone playing a certain amount of minutes, I always get the, they're 22, they can play 45 minutes a game or whatever. Shout out to our friend Streaker who just said, I can play 48 minutes a game because I'm built different, which is the meme that has essentially been created now. Now, are these guys going to play 40 minutes a game in a postseason series? Maybe they do. What did you think of the way that the bench guys played when they were in there? Because I didn't sense an impact from anyone besides Craig and Johnson, I'll say, I guess.
Yeah, I'm going to say campaign too, because I think at the very least he was holding it down, especially this last game. I think he had a little bit better of a game. But, you know, that's important. Steal minutes when Chris Paul needs a break and you know that you're going to need to ride him in the fourth quarters and stuff like that. I think he's really good when he's aggressive. And, yeah, Cam Johnson was the biggest winner because I think our last pod or two pods ago, we were just like, he's probably going to have, like, a big game, and he hasn't had that yet. And he only had 11 points in the Jazz game, but it felt super more impactful just because of the timing of his shots. He was crashing the glass really hard, drawing fouls, that type of stuff where we didn't really, you know, he hadn't been really standing out. And a night when Mikal Bridges is, you know, in foul trouble, that's that much more important. So I think those guys, Torrey Craig, I think, he's going to be important during if they fight the Clippers again, just because of all those wings. And one thing that I don't know, again, going back to Mikal, is like, is Mikal that great against giant wings like Kawhi? I don't think he's bad, but I don't know if you'd rather have Torrey Craig on a guy like that. So the options are good at the very least. Guard play, you're missing something. I think, again, like I said, Langston, I think, should have been in the second half last night, because if Carter's passing up open threes, it's...
Yeah, that one was bad.
And then, yeah, Dario's just in one of those funks again. I don't even know.
Yeah, let's close on Dario, because solutions are either play DeAndre 44 minutes a game or get Frank in there. We shouldn't even talk about Jalen Smith at this point, right? Just to clear every base that has been approached.
Okay. Yeah.
Just making sure. There's Frank a reason he's not playing, everyone. Just think about why he's not playing right now. How could he not be playing? Let's think about it. He's probably still a little bit behind. So looking at Dario, I'm pulling up the game log. He has the bounce back games against Atlanta and Chicago. He scores 20 points in 18 minutes against Atlanta, 16 points in 20 minutes against Chicago. He has like a decent 11-3-2 against Oklahoma City in 17 minutes. And then he is 0-6 in 14 minutes against Houston for 1 point. 2-3 with 8 rebounds in the Utah game. I thought he was okay in that game. I think like defensively, that's where he was really struggling a bit. And then in the Clipper game, of course, he was not good at all. He was 0-for-4 in 13 minutes. I think you have to play him. I think you have to play him in certain stretches for sure. I wonder if the solution is – I do not think the solution is Frank, to be clear. I wonder if the solution is to just go super small for some stretches, which is not, of course, with what they'll do. But if you look at this Jazz team, for example, they played Favors off the bench. Favors had 8 rebounds in 16 minutes, so maybe that's too much size you're looking at necessarily. But the Clippers didn't even play a backup center. They just had Patrick Patterson at the 5, Batum or whatever. I think that depending on the playoff matchup, Monty might need to look into just like going super small. It was nice to see that his last grasp at the game, when the Clippers went super small, he kept DeAndre in. They tried to feed him for a post possession. The pass was off and he wasn't able to catch it. And then a minute or two later, he did go super small with Crowder at the 5. I think that is the solution to Dario, more so than someone else playing in terms of like Frank or Ayton playing more minutes. I think they just have the personnel on the wing to play down. Where are you at? Do you want to see Frank back, a small ball?
I think you need Frank back if Dario's playing that poorly. Like, the Jazz game, getting 11 minutes out of him, I don't think is a good idea. And I mean, looking back, it wasn't bad that DA was having to play matching up against Favors as well as Gobert. But yeah, I mean, it is team dependent. I agree with that. I guess Frank, I think you got to consider Frank though, because if Dario's playing like he did in the Clippers game, and there's another big, like, Frank can at least give you that. But yeah, against the Clippers, where there's not going to be, like, Patrick Patterson's not going to kill you inside, I think you might as well just go small, match up, switch, do that. You have the wings available, and if you had Nader healthy again, then maybe that's freeing up other minutes elsewhere to do wing heavy lineup. So yeah, it's opponent dependent, I guess, but you know, Dario, it would be interesting to go back and just see which games he's successful in and who he's matched up against, because you know, usually we haven't really needed to look at that just because he's been so good all year and we haven't really paid attention to matchups, I guess. But yeah, I think it's dependent.
I think it was our buddy Max who tweeted, yeah, the Dario post-up possessions probably need to stop now or have less of those. It was one of those two things that he said. And it's interesting because I agree with him. Like, if he's playing this way, just don't do that. But the Laker game, the first Laker game, remember, they just kept giving him the ball down there and they couldn't stop it. And that's part of why they won that game. So I don't really know what the answer is. I really think that he should keep playing. You should give him like as long of a leash as possible to kind of get back to the player that he was, because he was just such an impactful piece for them. His net rating is still insane. And he's hitting his shots for the most part. I mean, he's down to 35%. All of his percentages are kind of back to what they've been over the course of his career. But he's been a decent stretch big. I think the thing about Frank is that he's always been super productive when he's been in. His per 36 this year, 16 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and only a turnover a game. So that's like a turnover, assist to turnover ratio of like nearly 4. And he shot 41% from 3, and that is on 64 total attempts from 3. So it's like a pretty decent sample size given how little that he's played. And at the end of the day, it's only 10 to 15 minutes you need him out there. The negative, of course, is that when he was played, I think that it was an important thing for the team to learn that when they did play him and start him for rebounding, he wasn't able to provide that. Do you know what I mean? Like, when other teams were going big and they were looking to win the battle on the glass, or even against teams that were like smaller than them, they still were getting out rebounded in some stretches. So it's not really proven to me that he's like such a stronger interior presence than Dario, because I think they're such similar players, and I just think Dario gives you so much more.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's going to be a playoff matchup where I would not be surprised if by game 2 or game 3 Dario's not playing anymore, or just Dario's not playing anymore. It's just going to depend on the matchup, I think.
Yeah, and you know, Frank, what this is his best shooting season from three, and that's kind of important. As much as he's been on the bench right now lately, yeah, I think they are just more interchangeable. I don't think you would have to go to Frank for any other reason than Dario's just not playing well, to be honest.
I think that's it, buddy. You got anything else?
I do not. What's ahead here? Some bad teams again. Great.
Yeah, it's really strange to kind of zoom in, and I think that's why we really went in depth on that Brooklyn loss a couple months ago, because these games, you don't get these games a ton during the regular season. Even if you're a great team like the Suns are and you're playing a lot of great teams in the West, both teams like meeting each other at that threshold, not necessarily a thing that happens a lot. And I'm interested to see what happens when they're pushed to that limit again. Because they met it against Utah and met it against the Clippers, but can they meet it consistently? I'm sure they will in the next time they play both of these teams, which is later this month. But up next, Kevin, they've got Washington, who's lost 4 of 5, Houston, who we just saw earlier. Miami's won 4 of 5, but they're still kind of floundering, I guess is the right word. Floundering for what their expectations should be, but they're still a good team that you need to prepare for, and I think that was one of their better wins of the past month or so. Or past couple of months, I should say. DeAndre was great. Oh, yeah. Oladipo got hurt, didn't he?
Yeah. He's not going on a West Coast road trip, so I assume that's the Suns. But
That would be the Suns. What a surprising development, Kevin. A key player for an opposition, for a member of the opposition getting injured. They got the Kings up next, who won 5 in a row before losing 4 straight. The Spurs are an absolute tailspin. And then that is the 5-game homestand that they have that is over the course of 8 days, I believe, 5 games in 8 days. And then they go on that East Coast road trip that we've been talking about ever since the second half of the schedule came up that features some of the best teams in the East. So to end it, Kevin, we haven't talked about the standings in a couple of weeks. Where do you, if you had to guess where they finish right now, where would you say? The Nuggets are thriving with Aaron Gordon. They've won 7 in a row. They're only 3 games back of the Suns for the 2. The Clippers just showed last night why they're still a threat to potentially catch them. And that's relevant, Kevin, because both of those teams hold the tiebreaker over the Suns. Do you think they're going to, I think it's pretty clear that they're going to be able to hold a top 4 seed. Do you think that they can hold 2 though?
I would bet kind of against it just because of Denver, but Denver's also 3 games back and not 2. I can see one of those teams catching them. Yeah, I would say that.
You have pointed this out, and we're going to talk about this in a couple of weeks, but the Suns have not had the – Chris Paul has a sore right knee tonight. He's not playing. They haven't had many of those since they haven't had any of those really for their 2 star guys. Ever since I think like Chris Paul, like slightly hurt something and they were just being 100% safe like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see where they're at in the standings and where they feel like their bodies are at going into the postseason. Because if they feel like they need to have a game where one of those guys rests or multiple games, they should obviously take that and look aside from the standings, because I think that's another thing to kind of realize about this, Kevin, is that I think someone else was tweeting the other night, like the top 4, top 5, top 6 of like the West is just pretty insane. Like depending on how you feel about Portland. And then I guess we should say how you feel about Dallas, who are one of the hottest teams in the league right now. Memphis has also won 4 in a row. They're suddenly not around 500 for the time being. We'll see if that goes back down, but I don't think it does matter who you play, of course, matchup wise and stuff like that. Like obviously they match up much better with Utah than they do with Denver or LA, like the Lakers or the Clippers. But with that being said, it's still tough either way. All right, everyone, we'll be back next week. Goodbye.